This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. Hey everybody, it's Vern here. Before we begin this latest episode of Cinema Recap, I just wanted to warn you that there are going to be a few audio blemishes here and there. Nothing major, just some background noises that I did not have time to fix because we were having internet problems with our router, and that's why there was no episodes the last week. But everything's fixed at that point right now. There's a new router, but I had extra work at the job that I had to take care of, hence that's why I was not able to fully edit the show as closely as I wanted it to be. But it's still a good one. Hope you enjoy it. But that's right now. I just wanted to warn you that there's going to be a few audio mess-ups here and there during the episode, all right? But hope you enjoy, and now onto the show. Bye. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jadson.
Welcome back to Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jackson as always. Mark, I think we've been in a kind of a holding pattern the last few weeks. I think we got a big release coming up here that a lot of movies are trying to stay away from. I think come this Thursday/Friday, as you were saying a second ago, the summer box office is officially kicking off.
Yeah, I mean, I think you summed it up pretty succinctly there. And honestly, I feel like from now, from the start of the year until now, it really just has been, you know, let's just get us to Avengers Endgame. And, we'll figure it out from there. But yeah, I mean, a lot of news to see a lot is, you know, lowest box office during this time period of all time, or, you know, one of the lowest three top box, lowest box office recorded on record for this weekend. I feel like that's been a common theme throughout the year a whole lot. And, you know, goes without saying, this movie that's coming up on Friday is going to jolt that pretty heavily.
Yeah, I think I saw it was the slowest Easter weekend in the past 10 or 15 years. And I mean, I think you can probably, almost solely attribute that to just Avengers being around the corner and so many movies trying to stay away from it.
Right.
So, yeah, I can't wait, man. I've been waiting, God, ever since I saw Infinity Wars for Endgame to come out. And, you know, they've really done a great job with just teasing these trailers and not giving away too much. So, finally get some answers this weekend.
Yep. I'm with you, man. I hope that more movie studios take this approach. You know, they have given, I was just talking about this with a coworker today, they've given away, you know, next to nothing, and I love that. You know, if there's, again, it's not like a broken record, but if there's any movie that does not need to be sold, it's this one. But I think Hollywood can take a lot of lessons from the marketing approach for Avengers Endgame for sure.
Yeah, I'd love to see that, if movies would dial it back in the trailers a little bit, but I think, unfortunately, very few movies sell themselves like Endgame does, where you could you could not release a trailer and it honestly wouldn't matter.
Right. And I know we're kind of late on this. Last week we all had some technical difficulties with the Vern and whatnot, but I got around to checking out the new Hobbs and Shaw trailer. I think it's a great trailer. My only, issue is I feel like I've seen the whole movie now, from beginning to end, and I just hate that.
Yeah, they've not left much to the imagination in the past two trailers that have come out. So, and not to get off the tangent here, but man, the second half of that movie's really got me worried when they go back to Hawaii. I just think they're just going off the rails, man.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But yeah, we're not going to get on tangent today. Today is going to be very much MCU focused. But I guess we'll get it started here in a second once we have some little news.
Absolutely. So we'll kick off the real news here, and then we'll kind of breeze through the weekend box office, and then we are actually going to do a countdown of all of the Marvel, Avengers universe movies that have come out from, for our personal favorites, starting with 21 all the way down to number one. Before we get there, though, we'll dive into some real news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone!
To be honest, we didn't have a ton. It looks like they did release some preliminary stills of James McAvoy and his character in It 2. And I think a promising thing for this is we're probably going to get some footage of the film pretty soon. I would imagine they'll probably be releasing a teaser around the corner.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I was kind of surprised. I went to go see Pet Sematary. Did you check that out a couple weeks ago?
I've not gotten a chance to yet. I'll probably All wait right. until I can rent it.
Yeah, and it's fine. I know we went over it the last time, but I was kind of surprised. That just felt like a natural way to, you know, show off a little teaser during that Stephen King adaptation. It shows a little something for it too, even if it's just a minute. I really thought we've got something there, but alas, we didn't. But I have to assume if we're starting getting, you know, some stills here and some stills there of James McAvoy, a trailer has to be right around the corner. I feel like in the next 30 days, we're going to get something.
Yeah, that's a great point. You'd think, you know, it makes sense to release the teaser of one Stephen King adaptation during another Stephen King adaptation. Kind of writes itself. So interesting that they didn't try to line that up. But regardless, yeah, I think we should get some footage soon. And I imagine we'll start to see some more pictures surfacing on social media of Jessica Chastain, Bill Hader, their characters in the movie as well.
Yeah. Yep, I'm not concerned about the cast. I think they kind of nailed it pretty well for the most part. I really know nothing about the book, so maybe I'm, you know, overstepping here a little, but I do think, you know, they've gone well above and beyond to land some really, really talented people to bring this adult chapter home.
Yeah, you very rarely see these kind of acting chops in you know, horror movies, or maybe you get one actor that's, you know, a big name, but I would say they pulled in a really, really impressive cast that I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Me either.
So, Mark, what else we got in the news?
There was one other piece that I saw that I found kind of interesting. Scrolling through here, actually, did you want to talk very, very briefly about the news Keanu Reeves made about John Wick Chapter 3. We're really not that far away from that either. That's in a couple of weeks. Just to summarize it a little bit, Keanu was asked if, you know, he'd be up for more John Wick movies, and he said absolutely if the fans do want them. I was pretty sure, and I'm still kind of sure, or my gut says that they're going to end after Parabellum. I just think, you know, ending with three, ending a trilogy is great when you can, you know, leave the fans wanting for more. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's your overall take on this? If they want to do, I don't know, another two of these after Parabellum.
I was surprised how much I liked the second one. I thought it was extremely entertaining, and I really liked the you know, new world that they expanded. But I feel like a series like this one, it's going to be, you know, jumping the shark is going to happen sooner rather than later. So if 3 comes out and it's awesome, I would really want to see them wrap things there. I think it would only be a matter of time before they release an absolute dud of a movie. And then we all think it kind of, you know, squandered the franchise.
Yeah. And I mean, my gut says they're, I think, moving forward with a TV series. I don't know, you know, what those actually do, but there is enough lore in like the Continental and that world to, you know, maybe explore some other characters, maybe some like side characters we got over the last two movies. I would be okay with that. I don't know if I necessarily would rush to see that just because I probably watch a lot more movies than I actually do TV shows. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that would work probably a little more for a TV series than if we kept on trying to do like another movie. I'm with you on that front.
Yeah, I guess I'm not exactly yearning for a John Wick TV show, but you know, if like a Showtime or an HBO or a Netflix picked it up, you know, so you know that they're going to put some serious budget behind it and it can be violent and, you know, graphic, I wouldn't be opposed to that, but I think it's going to be kind of hard to recapture the original charm, if you will, that the John Wick movies had.
Yeah, I would say no, but I think they're already well into production, so it's going to happen. Doesn't mean you have to watch it, but I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize this, but you know that they've got the new Child's Play movie that's coming out this, I think, summer. Yep. Which we recently had the first, I guess, more full trailer for.
Yeah.
And they're going to do a TV show as well that's unrelated to the movie, which I found was just kind of very peculiar. I think it's going to come out this year as well. And they're just going in different directions with it. So I was very caught off guard by that.
Do you know the name of the TV show?
I think it's just going to be called Chucky.
Okay,
and
cool.
I think it's going to be more tied to the original movies. I think the creator of the movies is coming back to help with the show. And the new movie is going to be more unrelated on its own note.
Huh, interesting.
But I didn't realize there was that big of a draw to not only have a new movie started, but also a TV show for Child's Play. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I saw some other news that I feel like it was about, it could have been about Chucky too, but I don't know. I thought I was reading into a synopsis for some movie and it felt very like meta, but I could be thinking of something else or I'm maybe completely off, but or maybe it was just that we just described, but I know that I saw Chucky in another way and I thought I saw him come up in another way that wasn't a TV show, but maybe I'll do some more research on it, and I'll see if it comes in my mind. We'll see.
Are even more Chucky stuff out there? Good Lord.
I don't know. I'm not sure, but I could have swore that I heard or read some other news about some like meta horror or something that did involve Chucky, but I could be wrong. If it's not coming immediately, then let's just chalk it up as speculation.
I'm sure horror buffs will be excited one way or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, other than that, Mark, was there any other news we wanted to touch on?
I think we got just about all of it. I think we covered it for the most part.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap things up there. And we will take a pause for a few minutes to hear about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
You are about to witness history in the making.
Hi there, this is Todd from Forgotten Films, and if you spend all your time watching new releases, then you need to broaden your movie horizons. And a great way to do that is by joining me for the Forgotten Filmcast. We don't talk about the new releases, we don't even talk about the classics. We talk about the movies that time forgot. On each episode, I'm joined by another film blogger to discuss a film that may or may not be worth rediscovering. So look for the Forgotten Filmcast on iTunes, Podomatic, and wherever you find great podcasts.
Hi everyone, this is Tim Costa.
I'm Hermano Da Silva.
And this is Walter Vinci.
And together we are the First Time Watchers Podcast.
Each week we choose a movie to review that none of us has seen.
Watch it together.
And then discuss.
These movies could be new.
Or old.
Or on our list of shame.
You can find us on iTunes by searching for the First Time Watchers Podcast.
As well as on Stitcher.
And we love interacting with our listeners, so if you have any suggestions, send us a tweet.
An email.
Or post to our Facebook page.
We'd love to hear from you.
That's right. I mean, it's all about interaction.
And talk about what we love, movies.
And you don't have to worry about us going on and on about this and that and the other. And
Shut up.
I wonder
shut
who the
up.
Cat
God
I
God
can
damn it, shut up.
I think that's enough.
All right, and welcome back to Cinema Recap. We've got your hosts, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jackson. And we'll go ahead and dive into the box office recap of the previous weekend.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
Before we do, though, Mark, I believe you got to a new release not too long ago, which unfortunately did not make the top five. But you want to tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah, so I saw a movie known as Teen Spirit, and essentially it's a musical drama. There's this teenager who is trying to become a singing star by participating in this competition known as Teen Spirit. It stars Ellie Fanning as Violet Valensky. They live in this Isle of Wight that's slightly off of the England mainland. You know, they're kind of poor. She's obviously in school, high school senior. She's working a job when she's not at school. But when she's not at school or not working a job, she's you know, imagining herself as a senior. She's, you know, going through a lot of the role playing, or she's, you know, singing with the church choir, etc. So one day, you know, she kind of gets recognized by this patron. They find out about this teen spirit competition, and she, you know, goes all in on it and, you know, attempts to change her life forever. That really is the crux of the story. It's about 91 minutes. I think, you know, the easy way to describe this is if you took DNA from, like, A Star Is Born with a little bit of Rocky, The Karate Kid, and American Idol, then you would really get this movie.
Those are some pretty good movies you listed.
Yeah, but this is not a great movie. It's still entertaining in spots, for sure. But it's very much, you know, you can feel the, it does not have the production like those other movies. Let's, you know, leave it at that. It is directed by a first-time director. His name is Max Minghella. He starred a little bit in The Social Network. I forget what role he played. But again, it's very straightforward. I guess another movie I can throw in there that also isn't as good as what I just rattled off, and it's probably a little closer to that side, is We Are Your Friends. Did you see that movie? That was way a couple years ago.
I don't think I did.
All right. That is kind of like an EDM movie about this DJ who, you know, feels like he's got all the skills and he's going to do whatever he can do to make it big. It kind of feels like that in spots, but it's not as... it's not as bass heavy. It's not as, like, self-important. It's not as smug. So it's a little bit of a better movie than that. I will say, you know, the movie is very predictable, and it really doesn't shy away from that fact. There are some really good sequences, though, and this movie at times looks like a music video. Normally when I would say that, that's like a negative, but for here, it very much fits that feel. There are a lot of, like, remixes and, like, pop songs that are, I honestly can see myself firing up these on Spotify and actually listen to them from time to time. They have this really cool Ellie Goulding Lights remix that I felt was pretty awesome. And, you know, it, again, when the movie does that, like, it's got a lot of energy to it. But overall, it's pretty predictable. Ellie Fanning, she's good in it. I've definitely seen her, you know, better, but she had to do a lot in this movie. You know, she most definitely did sing when it was required of her. So, you know, I think that's that deserves praise in and of itself. But yeah, you know, it's a very much a quick 91, 92 minute movie. Super predictable. Doesn't hide the fact from that. Hits all the, you know, familiar story beats, but it's got a little bit of emotion here and there. I guess I would slightly recommend it, but, you know, it's probably not going to be in theaters long. It only made, I think, something like 325,000 if I've kind of right on that estimate.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably going to have a pretty short lifespan. But it was weird when I saw the picture for the movie of, mm-hmm. you know, Elle Fanning. It's got the, like, crazy pink lighting. It reminded me of The Neon Demon at first. I wasn't sure if it was, like, a horror movie or not. But
very not much a horror movie. You know, this is full on a musical drama. Her character is kind of like her character in The Neon Demon a little bit. You know, she's very shy, introverted, trying to kind of figure out her place in this, you know, biz. But, you know, it's definitely not as dark. It's not as layered. You know, it's not as sinister, if you will. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, when I watched it a little bit, I definitely felt like there are some similar tinges to both the characters she played in those movies.
Okay. All right, good deal. And that is Teen Spirit, and we can find your review on thatmomentin.com, correct?
That is very much correct.
Awesome. All right, well, with that, we'll go ahead and dive into the top five. Again, we're just going to breeze through this so we can get to the Marvel piece. But in the five spot, we've got Little, which brought in $8.3 million domestically. In the four spot, actually jumped back up two spots from number six the previous week, is Captain Marvel with another $9.1 million domestically, bringing its global haul to just a little shy of $1.1 billion, which is nothing short of impressive. Number three, we've got a newcomer Breakthrough that brought in $11.2 million. Down one spot to number two is Shazam, which brought in another 16.4, And our newcomer and leader from the weekend is horror flick The Curse of La Llorona with 26.3 million. Mark, did you happen to see any reviews of The Curse of La Llorona?
I did, and you know, if we're just looking kind of aggregate right now, it's currently sitting at about 33%. The main things I've heard is it's very, very, you know, formulaic. You know, super heavy on the jump scares. Apparently, there's, you know, some potential in the story because I think it's kind of lifted from kind of like a real life or you know, that type of gist of a story. You know, urban legend, if you will.
Sure.
So I've heard a lot of potential for this story, but it definitely seems like they rushed through it a lot. They don't really give much care to it. And, you know, the funny thing is, I think technically it's kind of tangentially connected to the Conjuring universe, but everything I've heard is the connection is like barely there, blink and you'll miss it type of, you know, light. So one type of piece I've heard that's kind of concerning people is, you know, couldn't the studio just kind of make up any horror movie and kind of put in one kind of random piece and say, hey, this is connected to the Conjuring universe? I guess in theory they can do that. You know, I don't know how beneficial that is to the brand moving forward. But, yeah, I've heard some people kind of be a little pissed off because they're not exactly playing it up, but they're kind of winking at it enough to say, hey, this is part of the Conjuring universe, you know. You guys should watch this because we're going to have this whole, you know, big, you know, database to draw from that we can kind of, you know, bump and hit our chest at moving forward in the future.
Man, the Conjuring universe is really expanding. Is there like a long-term strategy with what they're going to do, or are they just going to keep making spinoffs?
So I know that we're getting a Conjuring 3, I think, next year. I'm not sure if that's being directed by James Wan or if he's just still producing. And, you know, I know those movies have, you know, they've been pretty steady because, you know, James Wan is one of the, you know, best modern horror directors I think we've got.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like everything else has been pretty hit or miss. I mean, you know, I think the first Annabelle was pretty bad. The second one, slightly better. Maybe not great, but slightly better. I remember you talking about The Nun and you weren't necessarily happy about that. So, yeah, I feel like, I guess the strategy is, you know, we've got this name that a lot of people recognize and we can kind of make some connections that aren't exactly there, but they're there enough to still bring people into the door. So that's how we're going to keep on keeping interest and making money.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the Conjuring flick, so I wouldn't mind seeing another one of those. But yeah, it seems like they're doing so much with it. It's just hard to tell if there's, you know, an idea behind it, what they want like an end goal to be, or if they're just kind of going off the cuff like, oh, people thought this was scary, let's make a spinoff.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure. And I know in a couple of months we're getting Annabelle Comes Home too. So it stands to reason like we're probably gonna get, you know, two of these a year that are again tangentially connected, if not fully connected to the Conjuring universe. It just seems like that's gonna be par for the course moving forward.
Yeah, might as well just keep pumping them out while they're making money, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up the weekend box office recap. I mean, there's nothing coming out this weekend that's going to, you know, try to go up against Avengers Endgame. So that's really the big release coming up. And I think it goes without saying that we're both mildly excited for it.
Yeah, you could say that, and I'm not even I bought it up a lot of times. I'm not even a huge comic book fan, but you know it's power to the MCU that, you know, they've been able to get people who really don't care about comic books at all to really get all this invested into the 22nd movie in their franchise. So yeah, I'm in. You know, I bought my ticket yesterday. And a person could say, well, why didn't you buy it, you know, 2 weeks ago? Why did you just buy it now? But, you know, I was like, I still feel I can grab one semi-randomly and right before the show starts. But the more I start thinking about that, I'm like, that's the stupid strategy. You know, get your ticket now, even if it is just days before. And I'm going at 8 a.m. on Saturday to check it out. And I think it's like 80% full. I'm not going to get the best seat I usually get, but you know, I'm still going to be there. So, yeah, you know, I'm interested. I'm all the way in.
Well, I hate to say it, but I've got a buddy in town this weekend, and we're doing a weekend hiking trip. So I am not going to be able to see it until like Monday, I think.
Okay.
Which I hate. I'm going to have to stay off social media completely because, as you know, pretty much the two biggest things on social media right now are Game of Thrones and Avengers, and I will be less than pleased if anything spoiled about it for me.
Right. I don't blame you, man.
Yeah, so unfortunately, our Avengers podcast might be slightly delayed if you don't mind recording a day later.
But, I'm cool with it. Yeah. You know, we gotta do what's best for we gotta do what's best for the people. We gotta do what's best for you too. You know, I don't know. We haven't really talked strategy yet, but I imagine we might have to get into spoilers, especially if this is gonna, you know, set the box office record. It stands to reason that probably a lot of people, you know, our listeners, however many or how many few are out there, will probably have watched the movie by the time we talk about it too.
Oh yeah, we'll definitely have to get into spoilers without a doubt.
All right.
Well, without further ado, as a little homage to Avengers Endgame, you and I are going to do a recap of our rankings of all the 21 movies that have come out so far, and we're going to rank them from 21 through 1. I think we'll go in blocks of 5 at a time, and you know, we can just kind of discuss it back and forth a little bit. If there's any in particular movies we really, you know, have a deep desire to discuss in some more detail, we can certainly do so. But with that, do you want to go ahead and start at your number 21?
Yeah, absolutely. So my number 21, I'm going with one of the earlier ones of MCU. I'm going with Iron Man 2. I don't really remember a whole much about this movie outside of Mickey Rourke and his kind of oddball villain character with the, you know, weird hair and you know, all that jazz. And I do remember that that was a movie where they replaced Terrence Howard with Don Cheadle. As far as, you know, War Machine, you know, Colonel Rhodes goes, Rhodey. But, yeah, you know, I don't have much to say about this movie. I feel like it is one of the MCU's, you know, forgettable movies. And I guess the first kind of 6 or 7 in my list, I would probably deem as that. But it's definitely at the bottom for me. Yeah.
Yeah, one thing I realized when I was making the list is I haven't seen some of these movies in like 7 or 8 years, maybe even longer.
Right.
So I'm like, my memory was kind of blanking on a few aspects.
In a perfect world, I would have loved to rewatch kind of all of these before I could do this, but it's not a perfect world. But I do remember, you know, the first time or two times I saw these, and I'm like, yeah, after I've seen it the second time, I don't think I could revisit again. I really wouldn't care.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And I really struggled with ranking the bottom half of the movies, just because they a lot of them felt just interchangeable.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I guess that's a nice segue to my number 20 movie, which is staying with Tony Stark. I've got Iron Man 3 at number 20, man.
Oh, okay. Not a big fan of the Iron Man movies.
I like the Iron Man movie a lot, but I said that singular. I like the Iron Man movie a lot. You know, with 3, I remember, you know, this whole wave of everyone being super excited because it was the first movie after you know, the first initial Avengers, and everyone was kind of, you know, interested to see how it was going. And, you know, we heard some rumors, some, you know, stories about how, you know, sadistic this Mandarin character could be. And I remember seeing the shot on Late Night where, you know, Tony makes that threat to, the Mandarin, you know, and I'm like, man, this is intense. I feel like this is going to be a super, you know, I don't want to say heavy movie, but again, just a lot of intensity, a lot of edge. And I feel like I got that for the first 20 minutes. But after that, I think it was right after the Stark's mansion gets bombed and, you know, he gets flown and I forget where he lands in Tennessee or something. I don't know, man. A lot of the movie just, it didn't do a lot for me at all.
Yeah. It felt like kind of a misstep by Shane Black and, the, the arc they gave the Mandarin character like turned out to be really weird and just didn't work. So bizarre movie altogether.
Yeah. And I know there are some, you know, lovers of this movie and feel like it's kind of misunderstood a little bit. And even if you saw it on Rotten Tomatoes, it's still pretty high, all things considered. But yeah, man, it's just, it didn't do a lot for me. I remember watching it in theater and I came away just very, very disappointed. And I guess that also leads me to my 19 movie, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I left that movie pretty disappointed as well. Not obviously as much as Iron Man 3, just by the simple fact I've got it at 19. But when I remember watching the movie, and I just felt it to be very, very aimless for like the first hour of the movie. You know, I just felt like a lot of hunting for jokes, and I didn't really feel where it was going. I didn't even know if the script itself had a really strong idea of where it was going. It wasn't until maybe the second half where I started to get a little bit more invested into it. But, you know, even with that said, I feel like it's kind of one of the MCU's, like, forgettable movie fares for me.
Yeah, I didn't think that movie really went anywhere. Like, they get to the planet where Kurt Russell's located, and they just stay there, and you wait to see what happens. And I don't know, I just didn't find it, you know, overly interesting, I guess.
Yep, and then 18, I've got The Incredible Hulk, you know, and I guess in ways this kind of counts, but in ways it kind of doesn't because, you know, Mark Ruffalo wasn't even the Hulk for this movie. It came out 2008. You know, Edward Norton played the Hulk, and it was kind of like a soft reboot of Ang Lee's Hulk from 2003, 5 years previously. And, you know, what I remember of it, I remember the Hulk kind of being on the run a lot from – I think it was Colonel Ross, or I can't remember exactly, but you know, there were kind of some cool scenes, but overall, you know, I just it felt kind of meh, kind of felt kind of bleh, and obviously, I think they felt like they had to recast this person before we finally got him in the Avengers, and I do find it kind of telling that we never really got a standalone Hulk movie in the years since like the Avengers came out. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because the Hulk itself doesn't have that same type of depth as or interest as some of the other Avenger characters do. But it feels like he very much works more as like a supporting guy than can we really, you know, count on this Hulk Bruce Banner character to carry an entire movie.
Yeah, I think Bruce Banner is just a less interesting character than a lot of the other ones. When you look at like a Thor or a Tony Stark. You know, his best part is when he's, you know, in his mindless being that rarely speaks. So, you know, when that's the most exciting part of the movie, there's not a lot of great character acting going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess my last one in my block of five is Thor: The Dark World. I know some people absolutely hate this movie. I don't think it's a good movie by a stretch of the imagination. And you know, it did feel kind of like a slapdash, you know, plug plot in here, take them, you know, to this kind of weird setting there. So it felt very, yeah, it felt very kind of like, to use a NBA 2K comparison, like create a player, you know, type of plot. But there's still some good I liked about it. I think Chris Hemsworth really started to come to his own a little bit in the second movie, actually playing Thor. But again, you know, the villain itself was probably one of the more forgettable villains they've had in any Marvel movie. And Marvel movies usually struggle as a whole as villains. But, you know, I think it was the Dark Elves. I can't remember exactly who they are. Yeah. But they're very, very, very forgettable. And that's kind of the whole movie as a whole. I remember it came out in November 2013. And it made some good money, obviously. But I think the consensus is, you know, this is a very kind of dull-looking, dully plotted movie.
Yeah, yep, I really agree with you. That's why it's my number 19 spot. It just, I don't know, Thor's one of my favorite characters in the series, and it really pains me that his first two movies weren't better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, luckily, Taika Waititi, I think I might have butchered his name.
Yeah.
But, sorry about that. But, you know, I mean, he really brought out the nice, like, humor and, like, comic aspect of Thor, which, you know, I think was a pretty big hindrance in the first two movies. And The Dark World, it just felt confused, didn't know where it wanted to go, it didn't have an interesting villain. And I think they dragged around the Natalie Portman plot line and made that a focus, which just held the movie back.
Right, right.
So with that, let me play a little catch up here. I'll run through my bottom five. 21, I've got Captain America, The First Avenger.
Wow, okay.
I just didn't like this movie at all. I thought it took, one of the most important Avenger characters. And I thought the action sequences were very subpar. I wasn't really sold on Evans yet. I didn't love him as Captain America.
Sure.
I just didn't think the movie had a whole lot going for it. It just really didn't interest me. The time period, I'm not sure that I feel that they really captured, the World War, I think, one.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was two, I forget. But and then, a lot of the movie is just like him being this propaganda piece, and he's not even, involved in combat. So it just, sure. I don't know. It felt like a really bad start for me. I thought the best part of the movie was they premiered the first Avengers trailer at the end of it.
Right.
20, I've got Iron Man 2, which we talked about. Neither of us are really big fans of that one. 19, Thor the Dark World. 18, Incredible Hulk. And then 17 is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Okay, all right. Yeah, we're pretty much in lockstep outside of the first Avenger. I might surprise you a little bit where I have it, but we'll see. I guess we're coming up on it here. Might have to go in the blocks of six here just to get to like that sweet spot, that top 10.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Cool. So I guess it flips back to me. Number 16, I've got Ant-Man and the Wasp. I know this came out just a year ago, and I remember a lot of people really kind of liking it because, it took us off that dour note of how Avengers Infinity War ended. So this was very much like a scale back superhero, type of tale. And I didn't mind the scale back part. To me, though, it just felt, felt kind of overly fluffy. I kind of have some similar problems with it as I do with Guardians of the Galaxy. I think Paul Rudd does a really good Ant-Man. I just think that I struggle, though, to see maybe, if he will ever have like a villain that will really kind of bring out the best in his character. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that came out well enough, but yeah, I remember watching it and I laughed a couple times for sure. I thought the action was a little underwhelming. I can't really remember a standout action sequence of that movie. Maybe the final act, but yeah, overall it's from now till the end, I don't know if I would say any of these movies are particularly bad, but just for me, I definitely like them more or like them less than what's going to come up in my top 8, 9, etc.
Sure. No, I get that.
So 15, I've got Age of Ultron. I remember this movie being it still had a good amount of hype, but the main thing I remember this being is it came out 2015. The crazy thing about this movie was, this was the second time that all the Avengers were kind of linking up again to take out Ultron, who I think at that point had been described as, one of the biggest, baddest people, in the universe. But the thing that really kind of, I guess, petered down my interest for that movie was, I remember we got notification of Civil War happening like a couple months before Age of Ultron even released. So in a lot of ways, I feel like people were looking well past Age of Ultron and, just ready to get to Civil War. Everyone's kind of interested to see how are Tony Stark versus Captain America, how's that going to, play out. I know that was my thinking in the whole process. And the Age of Ultron itself, there are some things I like about it, but I do think that it's a little overlong in spots. I know that I forget who directed the movie, actually. Do you remember off the top of your head?
I think it was Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon, yeah. Yeah, I know that, there's some deleted scenes here and there where I think they do flesh out some areas where, Thor has to, go back to Ragnarok and, we've got, like, the whole cottage scene with Hawkeye. There are some cool things, but, overall, I did feel like it was kind of a disappointment from what we got with the first Avengers.
Yeah, I remember hype being huge for it after The Avengers was, one of the biggest movies of all time. Mm-hmm. And then Ultron came out. I think it almost felt like goofier in parts than I realized.
Yeah.
The story seemed all over the place. Like, it just really felt like they were cramming puzzle pieces together. They got the Vision character involved, and I know he became, I guess, kind of a staple of the team, but it was just really, the movie just felt weird. Like it was
That's right. I forgot about that. And even he had, like, you know, Quicksilver and, you know, Scarlet Witch in there. And, you know, obviously Scarlet Witch has been a pretty good, you know, addition to the Avengers. But, you know, Quicksilver obviously didn't make an entire movie.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and there's another piece that I really wanted to get to as well. But, yeah, you know, and the action itself, I sometimes can remember some really vivid, you know, set pieces. I can't really do that much here with this movie. I guess maybe the last part would probably be it. Probably Slovakia. That was a semi-interesting set piece. But, yeah, I mean, I just remember, you know, being pretty hyped for it. And, you know, Ultron, James Spader, they never really did nail the tone with Ultron. Sometimes they wanted to be uber dark. Other times it was kind of, you know, light, robotic, you know, one-liners. And it did feel all over the place, as you said.
Yeah, parts of it felt too goofy, and I enjoyed the Hulk fighting Iron Man in the Hulkbuster suit, but yeah. I thought Ultron was going to be a more sinister character, and it just didn't wind up being the case.
Right, and so 14 for me you might be surprised with this, but I've got Thor Ragnarok here.
I am surprised by that.
Yeah, no, Ragnarok. I know it's so. On one hand, I do like that they did something a lot different with the Thor character. You know, he very much did need kind of a refreshing. And Taika Waititi, I probably butchered it now. My apologies, man. He did bring a very kind of unique, you know, kind of trippy, you know, rock kind of style to the proceedings. And I thought that was cool. But I kind of go back to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, man. It didn't do a whole bunch for me in the way of a plot. You know, Jeff Goldblum's character, you know, when they finally kind of crash land and he's on that planet, I found it just a little too goofy for my liking. I do think they've got a really potentially strong character moving forward in Valkyrie, Tessa Thompson. I thought, yeah, you know, her chemistry with Thor was pretty good. And again, I don't hate this movie. I don't love it as much as everyone else. That's really what it comes down to.
Okay, well, it's certainly not where I was expecting that to be, but I have no doubt that I'll have a few that that you question as well. Yeah. And hey, to each their own. So I'll circle back to Ragnarok a little later on my list.
And I'll kind of go through the last three semi briefly, only because we talked a lot about 13, Captain Marvel. So I'm still not, you know, necessarily in love with this movie, but I've had about a month to kind of digest it now. I do think it's gotten a little better for me than when I first watched it. It just takes a little time for the movie itself. Maybe the first half is a little weak, especially the first 20, 30 minutes. But once it kind of does hit at, you know, that reveal of, you know, just who the Krill or the Krull, I'm probably butchering that name too, but, you know, just who the Krill are, you know, maybe they're not the baddies that we thought they were. I do think the movie picks up an energy a lot from the second half on, and I found it to be, you know, pretty enjoyable. So I am actually interested to watch it again one day when it maybe does come out on Blu-ray or something like that. So that's my 13. My number 12 is Ant-Man. I remember going to the Ant-Man, you know, not exactly sure what they could do with the character. I didn't know a whole bunch about the character with that said, but it did seem like they had some pretty good humor into it, so I was cautiously optimistic. And I found myself pretty surprised. I thought Scott Lang really did nail the character on his first go-round, very much different than anything we'd kind of seen to that point in the Marvel Universe. Pretty good chemistry with Evangeline Lilly. Again, kind of a semi-weak villain, but they had some really inventive, you know, action sequences, you know, with things going big and then going small, him using, you know, the suit to its full capacity. So, you know, I do think that it is kind of one of the more better self-contained movies for sure.
Yeah, I remember being very surprised by Ant-Man. I really liked Paul Rudd. It was, you know, the whole Ant-Man suit and using the ants is really weird, but, like, they did it right, and they got a lot of good humor out of it. I would definitely say, yeah, both Ant-Man movies struggled with pretty weak antagonists.
Yeah.
But enjoyable nonetheless.
Yeah. And I guess my number 11, you're probably going to be surprised it's here, but it's honestly a movie that if it's on TBS or USA and I've got nothing to do – I will probably check out like good 20, 30 minutes of it. It's Captain America, the First Avenger. I love that dynamic that Cap and Bucky have. I think that's kind of, you know, been a fulcrum of a lot of the MCU to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, having those two characters, you know, really kind of care and feel for each other. That gets me every single time. I think he had some pretty good, really good chemistry with, you know, Peggy, Haley Atwell. Sometimes I feel like some of the romance in these movies can be a little forced, but I did not feel that to be the case with that movie. I disagree with you on the direction. I actually think that the direction is pretty good. I do think it kind of captures that that World War One type of feel. Actually, it's more World War Two. But
Confused on that.
No. I said it and I caught myself too. But I think it catches that feel pretty well. It feels kind of different than a lot of the other Marvel movies, but at that point, you know, with that said, we really didn't have a lot to go off of, but I did like it took a little more of a historical bent. The action is a little weak. I mean, I can't remember a whole bunch about really cool action sequences, but I do like the stinger right before the end, you know, where Cap's been frozen, but he's got to get, you know, resurrected and, you know, brought into present day because they need him. You could say that it's just very much a elongated setup to the first Avengers, and it really is. I mean, it has it right in its title, but I do think it's a little underrated. So that's why I have it at number 11.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let me go ahead and breeze through a few of mine then. I think there's going to be a couple repeats here. But 16, I've got Iron Man 3, which we discussed. 15, I've got Thor, which I was actually a little surprised that you didn't have listed yet.
But, yeah, I'm just going to tease it. I have a little higher than people might anticipate, but yeah, we'll get to that when we get to it.
I actually do enjoy Thor, mainly because I really like Chris Hemsworth playing the character, and I think Loki's also a great villain, and then you've got Anthony Hopkins, so I actually do enjoy this movie a decent amount. I might actually, going back, I'd probably swap it with some others on my list, sure. But at the end of the day, it's still, I don't know, it just... I didn't think the action was there. The whole ice giant thing. I guess I wasn't prepared enough for the world of Thor. I didn't have any insight or background into it. So sure. It was all kind of, not like Star Wars-esque, but it was very heavy on the fantasy aspect, which I didn't realize. So, you know, maybe shame on me for going in with the wrong expectation, but it was definitely a little like weirder and hokier than I was expecting.
Sure.
Number 14, I've got Captain Marvel, which I haven't even seen. I'm just kind of guessing where I would put it based on mainly yours and mine conversation.
Yeah.
And since it's, you know, roughly in a similar spot where you ranked it, I feel pretty confident in that. 13, I've got Ant-Man and the Wasp. Again, you know, enjoyable movie. I liked Evangeline Lilly getting, you know, a lot more action in this. But, you know, kind of a flimsy plot with forgettable characters, you know, at least forgettable bad guys. Number 12, I've got Doctor Strange. And I've only seen this movie once. I remember I really liked a vast majority of it until the very end. The main villain that he goes up against, it's just like a giant face in like outer space. I don't know. I thought that was
Dormammu, I came to bargain.
Yeah, sure. So that got a little too far out there for me, but I really, really did like Benedict Cumberbatch. I thought he did an excellent job.
It's funny. That was just on before we got on the podcast there. They had it on TNT and I had it on the background.
Oh, nice. Well, you got it fresh in your head at least.
Exactly. Yep.
And number 11, I've got Age of Ultron, which we already discussed in a pretty good amount of detail. And that's one I'd probably drop back a few more spots after we talked about it. But sure. I still found it entertaining. I loved all the characters coming together, but I think it's definitely a flimsier movie than I remembered at the time.
Yeah. I don't got nothing to disagree with you on there. I guess we just got into Thor, and now we're kind of hopping back into Thor. So now we're officially, guys, we're in the top 10 of our list. Number 10 for me is Thor. I know some people, you know, don't really love the first Thor movie, and I wouldn't say I love it, but I do think it's probably second on like the first couple of original Avenger movies. With you, you know, I didn't know a whole bunch about Thor. I just knew he was kind of this, you know, this demigod. It's not Chris Hemsworth, I think, best version of the character, but I do think he's got a little bit more of a better handle on it the first go around than, say, Chris Evans did with the first Avenger. So I think he kind of hopped in that really quickly. But I think the main thing that makes this movie is, you know, Loki, that whole, you know, villain, you know, half-brother-brother dynamic that you really gave the MCU one of its best villains that, you know, it'll never ever, you know, have again. But, you know, Tom Hiddleston completely committed to that role. You know, the dynamic between him and Hemsworth is awesome. I actually do like the Earth sequences. Some people hate them compared to the rest of the movie in Asgard, but I think they were balanced, you know, pretty well. I think there's some interesting stuff they do there, and they do have like a nice kind of crowd pleasing moment where, you know, Thor's kind of got to humble himself. It's the age old story, you know, you got to get humbled before he can really, you know, realize your true power. He's got to humble himself, and then once he does, you know, he gets the full understanding and, you know, power of you know, his hammer. I'm gonna say the name wrong, so I'm not gonna say it.
Yeah, I've butchered enough names today, so I'm gonna skip that one too.
Exactly. But number 10 for me, you know, again, it's one of those movies, if it's on and I'm not doing anything, I probably will have it in the background and, you know, follow along for a good 20-30-40 minutes. Number 9 for me is Doctor Strange. You just got to it. I remember coming out of it, and I was like, you know, I don't know if I really, really love this movie, but it felt so much more different than all the stuff we'd seen to that point. It very, very trippy. It's really the only movie of Marvel I've ever seen in 3D, and I'm glad I did, just because the visuals of that movie, done by Scott Derrickson, are pretty on point. You know, it's an experience for sure. I think that it's very much an origin story, which is not too much different than some of the other stuff they do have. I do think that Benedict Cumberbatch, Doctor Strange, he came a long way in Avengers Infinity War. But with that said, I'm very interested in see what they can do in the sequel, Grant, assuming we probably do get one. I think it's on the slate there. And I really like the tease they kind of do at the end of the movie. You know, the villain itself, played by Mads Mikkelsen, is kind of more forgettable. We talked about Dormammu right at the end. But I do like the next villain they can move with, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, because there's like a direct personal link that they've got that they established in the first Doctor Strange. So I think that the possibilities for you know, him as the villain, I think it's Baron Mordo, can be very, very high.
I didn't. Is that how the movie ends? Is that he's going to go up against Doctor Strange moving forward?
More or less. So I think how that movie ends is, you know, Doctor Strange, he's kind of fully realized his powers, but, you know, a lot of people have kind of these powers too. Because if you remember at the start of the movie, you know, they've got the capacity to really, like, you know, heal the sick. You know, people who can't walk, they can do their magic and their mystic arts, and they can make them walk again. One of the things that makes Baron Mordo mad is, you know, he feels like regular people are abusing, you know, what they've got, what should be, you know, handled only by select few. So he's kind of taken back the powers and capabilities that their kind of group have given other people. So he feels like he's got to correct the wrongs, and he's going to do it by any means necessary. So, yeah, he very much is kind of put on the path of a villain to Doctor Strange at some point, because I think one of the things he leaves off of Doctor Strange is he gets out of the society. He says, you know, I can't do this anymore. I don't like where this is going. You know, again, too many people in the world have or know about us, and it shouldn't be that way. We should keep it secret. So, you know, I'm very much breaking away from this organization, and I'm going to be a rogue. So, you know, they very much do set it up to him being the villain, the antagonist to some point for Doctor Strange.
Oh, okay. All right. Ejiofor as the villain. I like that.
Yep. Yeah. I think he can pull it off very well. You start to see it as the movie progressed more and more, you know, the ideology that he has doesn't necessarily match, you know, Doctor Strange, Cumberbatch's ideology, etc. So they kind of teased it, but I imagine whenever that sequel comes out for Doctor Strange, I'd be very surprised if he wasn't the villain, unless they kind of save him maybe for, you know, something bigger, or if they had another, you know, huge storyline they can kind of put him in conjunction with other heroes, and maybe that could be done. But I don't know. He's going to be in it back at some point, I have to think.
Okay, good deal. All right.
So that's my number nine.
Okay.
Number eight, I've got Spider-Man Homecoming. I was very surprised at how well they, you know, just seamlessly brought back Spider-Man into the MCU. I think Tom Holland did an amazing job as like 17-year-old high school Peter Parker. I think it's the best iteration of the actual Peter Parker character we've got. And I said Peter Parker, not Spider-Man. I think he's a good Spider-Man, but, you know, I think first and foremost they got they helped us to kind of experience who Peter Parker is. And I think in some ways the other movies didn't do that as well. And I thought the Vulture by Michael Keaton was one of the best villains they had, a guy you could really kind of side with in some aspects of his thought process.
Yeah, I thought Holland, I agree. I think he's the best Spider-Man we've had, you know, after Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. I think he really got things back on track, you know, kind of playing like the almost like a minor sidekick or, you know, protege to Tony Stark. Yep. Brings a lot of great humor to the role. And then I agree. I thought Michael Keaton was about as relatable of a villain as you could get.
Right. Yeah. Good thing you're on the same wavelength there. Number seven, I have Guardians of the Galaxy. Came out in 2014. No one knew exactly what would be going down with this movie. But I think this was the movie where, you know, if anyone still had any doubts about, you know, could Marvel print out and churn out money for, you know, kind of C-list superheroes and almost make them A-list, you know, this was the movie I felt like kind of proved that. We very much a mishmash, you know, cobbled individuals together who really don't have any homes, but they find, you know, they find solace in one another. And I, you know, and that's, I don't want to demean the rest of the movie either. I think the movie is great. I think the writing is on point. The villain is fine. It's not a great villain by stretch of imagination, but I thought he had a good look, Ronan the Accuser. Mm-hmm. And they do have some very, very unique set pieces. Kind of felt like Star Wars going into Marvel for the first time, but almost even a better Star Wars, if that makes sense. If I just outed myself there, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, unfortunately, but I did like the setting. I did like space. You know, I thought Chris Pratt, you know, absolutely, you know, killed it, really cemented himself as A-list in this movie. Great music too. It's one of those scores I actually revisit every now and then on Spotify. And yeah, I mean, I was just kind of floored by how well, you know, they did this movie, and you know, Marvel taking obscure characters and really, you know, giving them a purpose in the MCU.
Yeah, I thought Guardians of the Galaxy had kind of like a Star Trek vibe, the new Star Trek yep. movies to it, where they mm-hmm. really blended kind of like a unique, weird quirkiness in this, you know, new universe with a lot of humor and great action as well. And I thought it was, you know, I wasn't expecting much, but I came out of the theater, you know, very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of people, I don't think it's probably right at number one for you, but for a lot of people, it is their favorite MCU movie ever.
Yeah, yeah, it's very highly rated on multiple lists that I've seen.
Yep. And I guess my last one for number six is Avengers, or sorry, it is basically Avengers movie though, Captain America Civil War.
Oh yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, you know, the running joke is kind of Avengers 2.5, and you know, it makes sense. It's really not so much of a Captain America movie. And he's, you know, he's kind of the number one guy, but we see so many, you know, different characters movie introduced for the first time. I mean, we got Spider-Man and Black Panther in this movie. And this was their first introductions into the MCU. But I really did like the overall story. I liked the opposing ideologies. I think both Captain America and, Iron Man had different, but, you know, well-realized viewpoints as to why they felt like, why they did. You know, I thought the movie did really well in explaining that and summing that up. I found myself super engrossed in that movie, really from beginning to end. I guess the only thing that I kind of don't like about it is how fast they just discarded Crossbones, played by Frank Grillo. I thought he could have been like a really, really significant villain for them to kind of either revisit at some point or come back into other movies. I love Frank Grillo, and I really liked him in Avengers, you know, the Winter. Why am I coming back to Avengers? Captain America, the Winter Soldier. But no, I was disappointed that they got rid of him so fast. You know, I thought that, you know, he could have been a formidable foe for at least Captain America, if not other people. But otherwise, I really do. I like Civil War a lot. I think it's a super detailed movie. It might, in my opinion, maybe have one of the best set pieces in the entire MCU with that airport hangar scene. I could watch that on loop, you know, endlessly almost.
Yeah, it's I pretty much agree with you exactly. You know, the I'm trying to blank now. What was I going to say? And God, you just made a point that I wanted to agree with you on. I'm completely forgetting what it was, but
was it about Crossbones? Was it?
Yes,
about,
thank you. Okay. Yeah, I loved Grillo. I loved him in Warrior. I loved him in Winter Soldier. I thought he was awesome on the elevator fight scene. So the fact that they did discard him so quickly was, you know, kind of a bummer to me. But overall, I thought the movie was amazing. You know, at first, I will say that, you know, kind of a forgettable antagonist, but all he's really doing is sparking the fight between Captain America and the Winter Soldier versus Iron Man at the end, which is just, you know, pure intensity, you know, like hold your breath for the last 20 minutes while they duke it out, and just an incredible scene. So,
yeah, that's a great scene too. I forgot about that, but that is one of the, I'd say probably one of the best, like, hand-to-hand, you know, fight scenes that they've had. I don't want to say, you know, ever in the MCU, but it's definitely like top three.
Yeah, I've got one that comes to mind that I might put ahead of it, but
yeah,
I think I know
what you're going at, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's right in the mix. I thought it was just a really well-done movie. Yeah, I mean, the hangar scene's incredible. It does some nice character, you know, introductions and brings a lot of characters together. And, you know, it gets the I think it really, really shows what the Russo brothers are capable of, and the fact that they are the right men for the job to, you know, wrap up this series.
Yeah, you're right, man.
So that was your number six?
Yep, that was my number six.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and bounce through my 10 through 6 really quick, and going to be mainly some repeats, but I've got Ant-Man, number 10, Spider-Man Homecoming, number 9. So this one you've not mentioned yet, but I'm going to put Black Panther at number 8.
Okay.
I don't think I was quite as high on this movie as everybody else was. It's a fantastic movie. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And it deserves, you know, I would say all the praise that it got. There's a, you know, a few movies in the series that I like a little bit more. I was kind of hoping that this would have more tie-ins. Maybe, you know, would have used Bucky a little heavier throughout the film, since we all knew that he was already in Wakanda. But, you know, if the idea was to really just focus in on, you know, Black Panther and Killmonger, and, you know, really build up their characters, then I totally get it. And, you know,
yeah. They
deserve the full focus of the spinoff. But I definitely say, you know, Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger's probably a top three villain, I would say.
I think that's almost, you know, undisputable. Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe top two, honestly. Just really, really awesome. And, I guess where I kind of fall off in the movie is the very end of it. The big battle scene, you've got like people riding rhinoceroses coming in. It got to be a little bit too much for me and maybe dragged on just a few minutes too long. But, you know, overall a really well done movie. So number 7, exactly the same as yours, actually, Guardians of the Galaxy. So we already talked about that one at length. And then number 6, I've got Iron Man. And I'm kind of torn on this one because it could honestly be, you know, probably 3 spots lower even, depending on the day. It's the movie that started it all. You know, it gave us Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. I think it's probably the most enjoyable Tony Stark character that we get because it's so fresh at the time. It's a huge rebound for Robert Downey Jr. You know, Jon Favreau's, you know, directing in it. He's also got a pretty funny part as Happy the Driver. Jeff Bridges, pretty awesome bad guy throughout the movie. I would say he's better when he's not in the suit, when he's a more interesting character, and as opposed to when he's actually in an Iron Man suit at the end of it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, again, it's the movie that started it all. If this movie bombs, the whole Marvel Cinematic Avengers universe probably doesn't get kicked off like it does, potentially. And it really just, I think it blew people away, and it's a fantastic movie.
Good point. Good point about that, again, really being the linchpin of what Marvel's doing. And if it was, I'd say maybe even just like average, you know, we probably wouldn't have the fervor that these movies have. Good point.
Yeah, and I think it kind of it perfectly captured the feel that they wanted the movies to have. A lot of humor, great action. You know, it really has develops characters that you want to be invested in. Whereas you look at the DC movies, I don't think they really knew what kind of, you know, vibe they wanted to give off. And that confusion is very easily found in the movies that followed.
Yeah.
So that's my number six spot. So I think we'll go ahead and dive into the top five now.
All right. Well, number five, I've got the first official team up movie. That would be 2012's The Avengers. I do think it's a great movie. Reasons why maybe I don't have it at number one. I do think when I rewatch it from time to time, it can be a little slow in spots. It can occasionally take some time to get going, and you know, we kind of have to set up these this edginess, because even though these are all heroes, they're all good guys, they don't have any recollection or, you know, even know who everyone is at this point. So it is very much like, who the hell are you type of deal.
Yeah.
I find some of that interesting, and in ways it kind of does set up some of the future feuds we do see, especially with Iron Man and Captain America. They lay out a couple of different future pieces right in the movie, which I find pretty cool. But there are some areas of the movie, in my opinion, that do drag a little bit. But with that said, you know, it's probably got one of the best, you know, 30, 40-minute ending, you know, sequences of all time in any, you know, cinematic movie. You know, really, when that when that scene starts, it's a famous scene now. You got that 360 pan that goes around like once or twice, and you see all the heroes situated in that circle. They're getting ready to take on, you know, Loki and, you know, his whole army of invaders. You know, really from that point on, and a little bit before that, but definitely that point in particular, that kind of cements the movie like, wow, you know, these type of movies are going to be in our future and in kind of our lives for a very, very long time.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think everybody was really curious to see what kind of balance the movie was going to have. You know, you're bringing in a lot of characters that could all lead their own movie, essentially, and you're going to try to cram it into, you know, roughly a 2-hour time frame. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of dialogue. You know, is everybody going to get enough screen time? And Joss Whedon did a really great job. I don't think it's aged as well as other movies. You know, and I think a big part of that is just because, you know, when you look at the action that the Russo brothers brought to the table,
I think
a lot of the other Marvel films pale in comparison. But, you know, again, I think this movie did exactly what it needed to. It really kickstarted things and showed that you could have that many characters in one of these movies. And yeah, I mean, it was like, what, the third highest grossing movie when it first came out, something like that? It had like the biggest opening weekend ever.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I think you do make a really good point about it kind of not aging as well in other spots. And I think that's why maybe I don't have it, you know, even higher. It's still high, but, you know, at five, I think there are four of the movies that do things a little better. But yeah, you know, the action sometimes now, kind of looking at it, and we could say this about a lot of different movies, but I mean, it doesn't age completely well. But I think ultimately it works the best because it did take that that progressive approach where, you know, we had spent more time with these characters in other movies before, you know, the big movie where they all, you know, gel and coalesce. If they would have did the same approach that you know, DC had done, and it probably would have caved in pretty fast, and, you know, we wouldn't have had we definitely wouldn't be on movie 22. I'll just, you know, leave it at that.
Yeah, DC came in and they really tried to just go with the kind of dark, like grittier comic booky feel, mm-hmm. with, you know, like Man of Steel into Batman vs Superman. and it went from bad to worse pretty quick. And then they were just stuck with their heads underwater trying to, you know, get out somehow.
Yeah. Well said, my man. Number four, you're right, hit on a little bit. I have it a little higher than you do. I've got Black Panther. I'd say mainly more for, like, you know, just the story and kind of uniqueness and, you know, the overall vibe and definitely the villain. You know, I do think in many ways Killmonger is definitely a top three villain, maybe even top two. You could maybe coach me into putting him as an absolute top in some ways. But,
sure.
No, I mean, I like the questions that the movie raised. Very, very compelling viewpoint that Killmonger had. So, you know, he wasn't just a complete, you know, monster, vicious baddie. He had very much kind of a – he kind of had a compass, but more so, you know, he had a real idea that made sense. You know, it's just kind of his execution that, you know, had faulted him. But there was a lot I like about this movie, a lot of standout sequences, great performances across the board, in my opinion. I guess maybe why it's not four or why it's four and maybe not one for me. I think the action's good, but there are definitely, like, moments that kind of do draw me out of the movie just enough. I think sometimes you can see where the green screen is a little noticeable, especially in those, like, those sequences where, you know, they're experiencing their loved ones who have died. I mean, there are, like, some really, really noticeable sequences there where it's like, wow, this just looks very very weird and very awkward. But overall, I still think it's, you know, one of the best movies they've done for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the whole scene in the casino was just awesome. If you remember
number three.
One.
And number three, we've kind of hit on it already in some way, shape, or form. I imagine it's super high for you. I think I might know where it might be now on your list, but I've got Avengers Infinity War. Kind of funny. I watched this movie a year ago, and I thought it was great first time I watched it. But I recently rewatched it again two times this past weekend. I watched it on Friday, rented it on YouTube, and then I watched it on Sunday with my sister, who, you know, had a really good time with it, though there are some things that she doesn't know exactly because she hasn't seen all the other movies. But still, you know, I found myself very, very surprised at how much more I liked it the second and third time compared to the first time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The Russo brothers, I feel like they're kind of working with magic here. I mean, you know, for them to really juggle as many characters as they did and not really have it feel bloated, I thought that was an impressive feat that probably won't be, you know, done again. Some really standout action sequences. And, I mean, it really comes down to Thanos, though. You know, this is Thanos' movie. So, you know, they're able to go a lot into his psyche and his mindset. And if not exactly sympathize with him, you know, it kind of comes back to Killmonger. He's got a little bit of reasons for why he feels he's justified. And with any good villain, if you can kind of, you know, get in their headspace and at least understand why they would think this way, you know, I think that's the makings of a very, very strong villain, and I do think they're able to do that. And Thanos himself, you know, I watched that movie, and it doesn't really feel like sometimes I'm looking at a CGI character. I feel like they really, really did an amazing job with making him feel fully realized, both, you know, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, and man, like, and Josh Brolin, you know, what a perfect voice actor for that role. He really captures, like, the calm collectedness, but also, like, a certain sinisterness that Thanos has, which really all combined makes him one of the best villains in the universe.
Right. I guess my only kind of slight flaw is, you know, I would, and this is kind of more of a movie thing or more of like an industry thing, though they kind of have to do it. They have to make shareholders happy. But, you know, I would have loved for them to maybe be kind of coy on, you know, just what movies we are getting, you know, in the future. It kind of does take the sting out of some things or some of the impact out of some things, knowing that we're going to get a Spider-Man and we're going to get a Black Panther.
Right. You know,
if they somehow could have kept all this under wraps, they still had the snap, those characters still vanish. And we're left wondering, well, you know, we haven't really heard anything, and everyone's committed to the charade. Like, just think how amazing that would be. Like, there would probably actually be legitimate, thoughts, like, are we ever going to get these characters again? Were they really just one off? Probably not, but I don't know. I just would have loved to maybe see them be a little bit more creative, inventive with, how they went about the snap, how they kind of announced these upcoming movies, etc.
Oh, man, if they could have filmed both movies at once but not told people that they were filming two movies and just released Infinity Wars, see the snap, and then, you know, keep the second one under wraps, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, yeah. But still, it's in my top three for a reason. I do think the more I watch it, the more I really do like it.
Yep, absolutely.
And number two, I have Iron Man. I already hit on it before. It's start in the genesis of everything MCU. An amazing, amazing performance by Robert Downey Jr. I liked Obadiah Stane. I mean, he's probably not one of the best villains, but Jeff Bridges really does commit to the role. He's got some amazing lines. The one I come back to a lot is Tony Stark was able to build this in a cave with a box of scraps. Man, every time I watch that on YouTube, you know, it just has me rolling. It's kind of borders on overacting. It probably is, but I think he was a great villain. The movie itself, to me, I feel like it's got a really consistent pacing to it. You know, I never felt that it was it dragged here, dragged there. I love the Iraq sequences, the first 30, 40 minutes. You know, it almost didn't really feel like a superhero movie. It's the first time we saw kind of a Marvel movie kind of take that approach. But, yeah, I mean, you really kind of started to get engrossed in the Tony. He's arrogant from what we've seen, but you know, we can tell in that cave he transforms himself a little bit and he kind of realizes what his mission needs to be. I thought that was great character building, and once he kind of gets out and figures out what he needs to do, I think the movie is like from start to finish, it's high consistency. And even some of the graphics in the CGI, in my opinion, haven't really aged that bad. You know, it's been 10 years since, but you know, I've watched it semi-recently, and I still felt like, you know, you can improve some things here and there, but I still feel like it's a pretty good-looking movie, all things considered.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's held up pretty darn well. Before you do your number one, you care if I play a little catch-up?
No, go for it, man.
All right, number five, I've got Thor Ragnarok. I agree with everything you said about the movie. I think there's a couple things that go into my high rating. One is I just love Chris Hemsworth, and I love his character of Thor. So this is probably a little bit biased that I had this movie rated this highly. But sure. I enjoyed it so much from start to finish. Like, the second the movie started, I was laughing. I laughed the entire way through, but I thought the action was still really strong. It's out there. It's a weird movie. Goldblum's character is very bizarre, but it was just so Jeff Goldblum that I loved it. And I thought, you know, for the first time, they really, really captured what they wanted to do with Thor in bringing so much humor to his character, I think, which makes him that much more intriguing as opposed to, like, just this big brainless brute almost.
Sure.
That, you know, not to say that that's what he felt like in the other movies, but maybe to a certain extent.
Right.
I thought it was great. And then the Russo brothers carried that humor into his character in Infinity War, and it just continued to work. So I just, you know, I think I have a strong appreciation for that film. Number four is Avengers. You know, you got to give it its due. Has it aged as well as other movies like Iron Man? I would say no. But is it still, you know, phenomenal? And is it pretty much the movie that showed us we can do these huge, you know, films, bring all these characters together? Yeah, it, you know, absolutely is. Right. So.
Now number three, huh?
Sorry, you still there, Mark?
I'm still here, yep.
All right, sorry. I had a phone call come in, which came into my headphones because it synced to my Bluetooth.
But, okay.
Yeah, but anyways, yeah, I mean, Avengers, the film that kickstarted everything, you know, I got to give it some credit in the number four spot. Number three, I've got Civil War. You know, we talked about this at pretty good length earlier. You know, outside of a couple gripes, I think it's a pretty darn, you know, incredible film. It's, like you said, it's essentially an Avengers, you know, 2.5, but pretty much everybody minus Thor is in it. But, you know, right. I think a big part of it is that the very end of that movie, It's just so well done. There's emotion. The action is great. I'm torn on who to root for, and you know, I think it. I think it wraps everything up on a pretty good note that kind of helps an easy transition into the future movies.
Good point.
And then number two, I've got Infinity War for every reason that we just talked about. I think it, you know, it's really encapsulated what made all the other movies great, and it kind of continued making the franchise even better. It strongly recovered from Age of Ultron, which was not to say a misstep, but I don't think it did anything to, you know, further the franchise. And, you know, it really showed us we can balance even more storylines. I think the Russo brothers did some incredible things, like the way that they introduce Captain America into the film, the way they bring in Thor at the very end. I mean, it literally had the theater, you know, clapping and applauding and cheering, which, you know, really made it a fun experience to be a part of. And it was just a blast to see the movie. And then when the snap happened, like you said, we kind of know that it's not the end of things, but there was still a certain sense of like finality to it that, you know, you'll leave the theory like on a very, or leave the theater on a very dreary note.
Yeah, and that's something that I didn't talk about, but you kind of brought it up. The credits themselves, man, I thought the credits were spectacular. There's just nothing but, you know, black and, you know, there's somber music and, you know, it's very, very clean looking. It's nothing stylized. They definitely play it up like, you know, what's going to happen. I thought the credits, and when people were watching the credits, it was very like, what's going on? You know, we've been conditioned to think about other things, but when they just kind of ran through the credits, and there was like no misconceptions or, you know, trying to get you to think about this. Like, no, you know, this is the state of the universe right now. I thought that the end credits themselves actually don't get talked about a lot, but I thought they're spectacular.
I don't think you could have wrapped up a better movie than they did with those end credits.
Yeah.
Well, this is an easy number one.
Oh, yeah, I guess we both have it as number one, Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Which I think it was almost like revolutionary what they did. And I harp on action so much, I can't help it. I love action sequences. I love hand-to-hand combat in movies. Yeah. After seeing Captain America, the First Avenger, I was like, this guy's lame. I could not be less interested in his character. And then the way they open the film with them overtaking the ship that's been, you know, taken over by terrorists to begin with. He has, you know, a hand-to-hand fight scene with George St. Pierre. And I was like, oh, my God, this is incredible. And from there on out, it's just great pacing. It's nonstop. They bring in Anthony Mackie, who's a great sidekick to Captain America. I think Captain America's, you know, relationship with Black Widow and their banter back and forth is really strong throughout. And his hand-to-hand combat scene when they're on the highway, him against the Winter Soldier, is just incredible.
Yeah, that was a great moment. That was so badass. You know, seeing them, you know, go after it. I feel like my thoughts are kind of unfocused, but I really don't have much more to add. You know, the way they went about that movie, you know, and kind of gave it a espionage type of feel, and you know, they in ways they kind of even deconstructed Captain America's character. As you said, you know, you really couldn't get much interested in him in the first movie. He felt very cookie cutter, and I mean, this was the movie where people was like, Captain America is my favorite, you know, Avenger. You know, you see a lot more of his character. You can tell like he's. Because, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's a fish out of water. You know, he's still been thought out. He's still figuring out how he fits in this world. It's not a America that he remembers. He's still very patriotic, but he's finding out that, you know, patriotism for him isn't patriotism for everyone else. And, you know, him kind of trying to rectify with that and, you know, realizing that, you know, the dangerous, most dangerous enemies are sometimes the ones right in front of you. You know, I thought him kind of realizing that and going through this whole process, in addition to figuring out, you know, who is this Winter Soldier? Why is he after me? Oh, I actually know this guy. You know, I want to try to save him. I thought it was pretty, spectacular.
Yeah, and, you know, the Russo brothers directed this movie, and I think they really – they put their own unique twist on the franchise, which really worked. And, you know, from here, we were able to bring them back to do Civil War, which was a smash hit, which got them back for Infinity War and now Endgame. And it really introduced them as kind of the staple that was going to bring, you know, this entire franchise to the finish line.
Right.
And, and thank God for that.
Yeah. So the Winter Soldier, you know, I had a feeling that you and I maybe would both have this as number one. To be honest, I've only probably rewatched it twice since I first watched it in theaters, but it still kind of has the same effect on me. So, you know, I feel like it'll age pretty well. It's really set up a lot of, you know, what's come after that. So, yeah, I feel like it's a rightful number one for me, and it sounds like it's a rightful number one for you.
Yeah, it's really held up, and man, that fight scene on the elevator, they set it up so well when he's like, does anybody want to go out or get out? And then he just, you know, starts going toe-to-toe with all those guys. Frank Grillo's amazing in that scene and for a better part of the movie. So
Even his uniform, you know, I just love kind of the alternate uniform they use. It was very it wasn't so, this is probably not the right word, but like, you know, comical kind of. It was kind of efficient, you know, a slimmed down, kind of muted in color. I thought it's my favorite Captain America uniform, if I'm being honest. You know, I know he's got the traditional, you know, red, white, what we know him for, but that is my favorite uniform I've seen that he's ever worn in that movie. So I imagine, you know, we're probably going to go back to basics with the, you know, Endgame, just to kind of bring things full circle. But even just his look, you know, I thought his look was awesome too.
Yeah, he looked like a superhero. In the other movies, he looks like he's dressed up for Halloween almost.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, John.
But yeah, they really, the all black uniform at the very beginning is great.
Yep. I guess, you know, maybe we can end this on, I know we've kind of gone on pretty long here, but maybe we can end this on like one thing that, you know, we really want to see in Avengers Endgame. It could be a character. It could be maybe like an approach. It could be almost anything. But, you know, what's one thing you really kind of want to see in Avengers Endgame?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I think what I really want to see, and I think we're probably going to get it, is just the core characters go like fighting back to back one more time. You mentioned it in Avengers where they do the circle shot around the crew when they're kind of holding court in New York together. And that's what I want, is just the characters that are really the heart of the Avengers to, you know, just have some great, you know, chemistry and moments together that really brings you back to, you know, 2012 when the first Avengers came out. And, you know, I'm a little reminiscent of that. I think I love all the characters that get involved, but at the end of the day, if you can simplify it a little bit and dial it in to just those characters that really got us to buy into this, you know, huge thing to begin with, I'd love to just have some more of that.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. I guess for me, you know, the one thing I kind of want to see is, I know a lot of times, you know, we kind of make fun of, wow, this is so, you know, dark, so somber. I don't want to say I necessarily want that, you know, just straight. I know there's going to be some levity, but I kind of do want them to lean in a little bit into, you know, the gravity of the situation here. You know, really make it feel like, you know, this is end of the world, and if we don't get this done, like, there is no world to kind of live on. You know, maybe that's exaggerating a little bit, but I would maybe like them. I'd be totally okay if they, you know, dial back the humor just a little bit, just to kind of sell the importance and the direness of the situation.
Yeah, kind of the severity of it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, who knows? Maybe if we get that or not. I know there's still going to be some really cool, funny moments. I mean, we've seen a little bit in the trailers here and there, but yeah, I mean, if they could reduce that a little bit just to fully go on, like, you know, this is no laughing matter, you know, let's get down to business. I think that would actually be pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think for a movie like this, you know, and I think they're going to do that. I think the humor is going to be dialed back after everybody that was lost, but no, I think you're definitely onto something.
Well, I think that about wraps everything up, man.
I hope so. I hope we covered everything. But yeah, you know, Avengers comes out this weekend. Like I mentioned, I'm going to have to see it a little late. So I think we'll definitely get a podcast out for this one since it shouldn't be such an event. It's just going to be a few days, you know, later than I would have hoped initially. But,
sure.
I can't wait. I've been waiting for this movie for a long time. It's going to be bittersweet when it's over. But
right.
I know I'll be really excited to knock out our podcast next week.
Yeah, I am too, man. I'm looking forward to going into some deep dives. Definitely, you know, spoiler heavy. So I guess that's the warning for everyone right now. If they haven't seen it, once we get out to it, it'll probably be middle of the week. But if they haven't seen it at that point, it's their warning. Yeah, it's a shame on them, but it's their warning that they probably wouldn't want to tune in for the next episode.
Yeah, well, with that, we'll
at least till I watch it.
Yeah, but with that, we'll go ahead and wrap things up, and we'll be excited for a big podcast next week. But thank you for tuning in to Cinema Recap.
All right, guys, take care.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.